Welcome to the Lexington Public Library's Tales from the Kentucky Room podcast, where we discuss everything Lexington and Fayette County history. I'm Miriam, and in each episode of this podcast, we will feature a guest that will share a piece of local history. So thank you for tuning in and enjoy.
If you've lived in Kentucky long enough, you know that we are no strangers to tornado watches and warnings. Most recently, the tornadoes that hit western Kentucky in 2021 brought tragedy and destruction in its wake. But looking back in history, there was another super outbreak of tornadoes that hit the northwest and central Kentucky region in April of 1974. The loss of life, injuries, and property damage would be insurmountable. The event is remembered by many, including our guest today. Please welcome my colleague and longtime Lexington native, Wayne Johnson, to the podcast where he will share more about this tragic event. Welcome, Wayne.
Thanks, Miriam. All right. Yes, April 3rd, 1974 was a date that many of us that were living at the time will always remember. The weather forecast on the front page of a local small town newspaper in Ohio read as follows. Stormy weather was moving into the area from the west at noon today. The National Weather Service at Vandalia issued a severe storm watch in effect until 3 p.m., forecasting possibly severe thunderstorms with large hail and damaging winds. That's from the Xenia Daily Gazette, April 3, 1974. By the end of the day, more than half the town of Xenia, Ohio, was obliterated.
Now, tell us a little bit more about where Xenia is in Ohio. Is it?
Oh, gosh.
Is it like southern Ohio?
It's northeast of Cincinnati.
Ah, okay.
Next to Dayton.
Okay.
And it was a town of, at that time, of 25,000 people.
Oh, okay.
So I know this is a Tales of the Kentucky Room. Mm-hmm. Our topics are generally Kentucky-oriented, mm-hmm. but April 3rd, 1974,
The boundaries are not there when tornadoes know no boundaries.
The entire
region
was hit, and mm-hmm. so we'll talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
Now, no one really knew the severity of the weather that was in store for them when they awoke on that fateful Wednesday, April 3rd, 1974, 50 years ago. Meteorologists knew the conditions was ripe for severe weather, but had no way of knowing the extent of the severity. A system of warm, moist air from the Gulf of Mexico was on a collision course with a cold front system with winds coming from the west. This had been brewing for a couple days, and in fact, a tornado had a touchdown in Campbellsburg, Kentucky, in Henry County on Monday night, 2 days before the super outbreak, and it killed one person. Now, the collision of these weather systems would make its mark on weather history known on April 3rd. The day is known as the day of the super outbreak of tornadoes. A total of 148 tornadoes hit 13 states in the South and Midwest and in the Canadian province of Ontario, wreaking havoc and destruction throughout its path.
That's a long path all the way up to Canada. Wow. Okay.
And it included many communities in Kentucky that were hit. The states hit were Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, New York, and, of course, Kentucky. When the super outbreak was over, over 300 people were killed, some 75 in Kentucky. I've seen conflicting numbers during my research, but approximately 75. And about 6,000 people were injured, and thousands of homes, schools, buildings, etc. were leveled during these tornadoes. At the time, over $500 million in damage was incurred. Now, that's in 1974
dollars. So that's by that time standard,
yeah.
Not
today, I think.
Adjusted for inflation or anything like that.
Yeah, adjusted today, I think it'd be like maybe $3-4 billion, something like that. Now, Kentucky has had many historical encounters with Mother Nature in its 230 years of history. There was the 1811, 1812 earthquakes, the Great Flood of 1937. I wasn't around for those, contrary to opinions. But there were also the harsh winters of 1977 and 1978 and the 1994 blizzard, and I remember those very well. The April 3rd, 1974 tornadoes are in their own category as far as weather disasters, and could only be described as a day of terror for many Kentucky residents, as well as others in the path of those tornadoes. Now, as mentioned, meteorologists in the National Weather Service knew that the Southeast and Midwest had the potential for strong storms on that day, given the warm, moist air coming up from Gulf of Mexico and the cold winds coming from the west and the plains. But they didn't know exactly the when and where and the severity of the storms.
They didn't have the technology that we obviously have.
No, they didn't. It was impossible to pinpoint. As you mentioned, the weather equipment at that time, unlike today, was not as good and can be described as, you know, pretty much old equipment from the 1940s and 1950s. So they were at a disadvantage as far as equipment in predicting these storms. Like I said, even with the old equipment, they knew the potential for bad storms existed. And once these systems collided, it was basically boom. The tornadic demons were set loose throughout the path of the 13 states in Canada. Now, although Lexington was not hit as bad as other Kentucky and U.S. communities, we had no tornadoes that were known to have hit in the city of Lexington. But it was still a very frightening experience for Lexington residents. My memory of that day, I was 17 years old at the time, it's still clear to me that day, at least some of it. After school, it was a norm to go out and shoot basketball. I mean, after all, this is Kentucky. So that's what I was doing that afternoon. The thing I remember most was the dark skies that descended on Lexington on the late afternoon of that day. The sky was very ominous. In my lifetime, I don't believe I have ever seen a sky as scary as that one. I'm sure the high winds and the storms that followed were pretty scary, but it was that dark sky on that late April afternoon that I remember the most. And doing this research, the one thing people comment on the most, other than when the tornadoes that experienced the tornadoes, is they all talk about how the sky looked.
Just
a strange looking sky that day. And I guess that's how tornadoes look. I've never experienced a tornado, so I wouldn't know. But anyway, I was out shooting basketball, and even myself can tell when it's time to get home. And we saw those skies, and I was about maybe half mile from home, and I ran home pretty quick. Back in those days, I could run a little bit. And then later on, it was pretty much lights out as the electricity went out all over Fayette County. First, the tornado watches were issued maybe around 6 p.m. or so, and then the tornado warnings came out around 6:30 for Fayette County. It was definitely a terrifying night for sure, knowing that tornadoes were out there somewhere. The waiting was hard and scary, at least for me it was. But thankfully, Lexington escaped any tornadoes. Now, there was a tornado that hit at the Fayette County, Madison County line, but nothing inside Lexington as far as I remember or the research shows. Now, police cruisers drove up and down the streets that night, warning everyone to stay indoors over their police intercom. The tornado warnings were in effect. Since this was the first time they had ever done that in my memory, I that automatically told me about the seriousness of this situation. And by this time, I'm sure Lexington officials and the weather forecasters and so forth knew what was happening in other parts of the country, including nearby Indiana, Ohio, and Louisville, and a small city in Meade County. They knew the tornadoes were out there, and they knew they were destructive. Now, we did not have a basement, so I just remember sitting in the living room and just waiting. Now, tornado preparedness was not as good as it is now. So basically, all I did was wait and hoped. we knew we were supposed to, if we had a basement, you'd go down there. But since we didn't have one, you get into like an inner hall. And at the time, they said there was a prevailing myth that you open up your windows, because at the time they thought the pressure from outside made the houses explode. And so people don't, I don't remember us opening up the windows. But anyway, that was one of the myths at the time, that this outbreak and later studies showed that it's just a myth that you're supposed to open up your windows when a tornado's approaching.
Yeah, no truth to that.
No.
Keep your windows closed.
And they also point out, too, you can waste precious seconds opening up windows and then getting down to your basement or getting to your point of shelter. And they basically say it's a waste of time to open up your windows. That's what they say. So, well, anyway, that day, Lexington and Knight was spared. A meteorologist later explained that everyone in the path of these tornadoes, you know, the 13 states and up in Canada, everyone had pretty much a chance of having a tornado form in their area. They had a chance of being hit. Well, luckily, Lexington wasn't hit, but other communities were not as fortunate. Now, I mentioned tornadic demons. They were on the loose in the state of Kentucky, as well as the 12 other U.S. states. Now, a tornado hit the Jet community in Franklin County near Frankfort and killed two people. Stamping Ground was hit hard with a tornado and had extensive damage. And Madison County was hit about 7:20 p.m. that night and had seven deaths. I've seen conflicting numbers on that. Some have seven deaths, others have eight. But Madison County was hit
pretty hard.
Now, about 20 tornadoes touched down in the state that day, causing damage and terror throughout the state. The death toll in Kentucky on April 3rd, 1974 was 75 Kentuckians killed. Again, that's I've seen conflicting reports, but we'll go with that number. Boyle County, Rockcastle County, Simpson County, Nelson County, Henry County had one death apiece. Warren and Hardin County had two. Franklin and Wayne County had four. Pulaski had six. Jefferson County had six. Madison, as mentioned, had seven. Clinton County had eight. And then there's Meade County. April 3rd, 1974, Brandenburg, Kentucky. A tornado warning was issued for Brandenburg, a small town of 1,700 people in Meade County, located on the banks of the Ohio River at 3:55 p.m., 15 minutes before the tornado hit. Not enough time to get to safety for a lot of people.
So they didn't get enough of a warning. Yeah.
No, the warning systems weren't nearly as good as they are now.
Especially with the electricity being out, no television stations, no radio.
And no sirens.
No sirens.
And no smartphones with the app to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were in trouble. The tornado began in the neighboring Breckinridge County. And this is how it was described in a book that we have here in the Kentucky Room entitled April 3rd, 1974, Tornado. It goes as follows. Springing to life in Breckinridge County, the tornado battered a half dozen farmhouses and barns, knocked down utility lines near Hardinsburg, and damaged 60 homes in Irvington before swinging eastward toward Brandenburg, slapping down rows of trees as it went. Near Midway, not our Midway, but another Midway, it flattened five homes. Then it fell on Brandenburg. The town was simply unprepared. A few people, hearing the radio warning, tried to spread the alarm before running for basements, and the radio warning came just like minutes before the tornado hit. Not enough time to seek shelter for a lot of people. A lot of people tried to spread the alarm before running for basements, and it continues. But most of them heard only the giant roaring, saw the awesome writhing cloud descend on the western edge of the town. They dived for doorways, cars, ditches, anything that offered cover. The West Hill residential section was almost obliterated. Then the wind tore into Fairway Drive and leveled the modest homes there. Down Main Street it roared, blowing apart the Applegate and English Agency, sending concrete blocks slamming into new and used cars. Betty's Coin Laundry disintegrated, according to this report. The courthouse lost its roof, then its second floor. Blake Hill, across from the courthouse, was beaten into a scattered rubble. At the foot of Main Street, a shoe store and a home disappeared. In little more than a minute, the tornado had made Brandenburg all but unrecognizable. Main Street was filled with rubble, wreckage, utility lines, trees, and the scattered bodies of cars. Above the ruin hung the dusty smell of debris and death. In the hideous hours that followed, the survivors of the Brandenburg tornado would pull from the wreckage the bodies of 30 dead. I think the official count was another person died later. 150 were injured, and like I mentioned, one had died later. And the town, as the local newspaper editor Jane Willis said, it's a shambles, an absolute shambles, speaking of Brandenburg. A minister was quoted as saying that he went to pick up his wife just before the storm hit. He said, "I left at 5 minutes after four, and at 10 minutes after four, the house left."
Wow.
So that's how quick it happened. It was an F5 tornado based on the Fujita scale, which we'll talk about later. It was an F5 that hit Brandenburg, the most intense possible. When Governor Wendell Ford arrived the next day to survey the scene, he just simply said of the devastation, "I looked at it and I wanted to cry." Now, I know officials today, some of them even do cry, but Governor Ford was a pretty tough guy, and for him to say that is very telling. He later became a longtime senator for the state. Now, it's really impossible for me or for anybody that does not experience these tornadoes to adequately describe the devastation that took place on that day, and I'm not even going to try in this podcast. You know, you can look at books and newspaper photos of this devastation, and you can get on YouTube and watch the videos. And that's probably the closest you'll come unless you happen to know someone that experienced the tornadoes and got their description of it. To me, the faces of the people that I saw in these videos and articles and books pretty much tells it all. It shows you how much it impacted them as basically just a
shock. There is a documentary, I believe you can watch on YouTube, about that specific day.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of them.
Yeah, so this all happened around 4 o'clock in Brandenburg.
Brandenburg. I think it hit, like you said, the house left at 4:10.
Yeah.
So it was,
basically. And then it made its way to other
areas. Yeah, the storm system made its way further up north in. There was some stuff going on down south, too. Now, it's not like these tornadoes just started and then they just stayed as a tornado the whole way and went through the entire northeast. It was a storm cell that facilitate the organization of tornadoes and hit certain areas.
And then the strength of it would fluctuate. It goes strength and then weaken and then strengthen, depending on the wind and the temperatures and all that stuff.
And like I said, the one that hit Brandenburg was an F5. There were a total of 7 F5s that day.
Incredible.
That's a very rare occurrence. I think I read something the other day about it's normal for maybe 6 or 7 a year might hit. Don't quote me on that. But
not all at once, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's another situation here later we'll talk about that was very rare. But there's many YouTube videos about today, and I went through a lot of them. I mean, I've always known when you hear a tornado warning, you know, we have sirens and, you know, you watch the news stations. I don't mess around. I mean, as soon as I hear it, my wife and I go down to our selected shelter down in the basement. I don't even, you know, hesitate.
Yeah.
And that's what I would encourage everybody out there listening is if you get a tornado warning, precious seconds can be the
decisive factor of whether you survive or not.
Yes, and during this research of this day, that's what happened is seconds were the difference, whether you lived or died. But like I said, there's many YouTube videos, and we got a couple books here on the tornado, April 3rd, 1974 tornado, and then the tornado, a look back at Louisville's dark day, April 3rd, 1974. So I use those for my research along with newspapers.
All right. And speaking of Louisville.
April 3rd, 1974, Louisville, Kentucky. In Louisville, severe weather warnings had been broadcast several times by WHAS radio station, 840 AM on your dial. I'm a big WH. I've listened to WHAS. It's like a 50,000 watt station, so we always got it clear here in Lexington. Yeah. And they used to have a golden oldies format in the 70s and 80s, and I used to listen to that all the time. But anyway, they had severe weather warnings issued over the radio station beginning in the morning and into the afternoon. Now, the last two warnings at 4:26 p.m. and 4:36 p.m. made it very clear, and these are actually tornado warnings, not severe weather warnings, tornado warnings, made it very clear that the danger was real and imminent and that tornadoes were forming in the Louisville area. Warning sirens are activated throughout the Louisville area. Around 4:35 p.m., a tornado hit the Kentucky State Fair and Exposition Center, tearing away part of the Freedom Hall roof and destroying rows of horse barns nearby. The tornado continued throughout residential neighborhoods. It took a northeast path through beginning in southern Jefferson County through the eastern part of Louisville, and it continued through the residential neighborhoods, and it basically was destroying anything in its path. Cherokee Park, which was the pride of Louisville with its rows of beautiful oak trees, was annihilated.
Mm-hmm.
I read somewhere 2,000 trees were destroyed. Yeah, and it was just devastating. Now, the death toll in Louisville was not as bad as it could have been. I think it was an F4 that hit Louisville. But because the residents had been warned throughout the day of possible severe weather, a lot of them were already prepared for it. Homes were destroyed, cars, trucks, schools, utility lines, trees, as we mentioned, you name it, they were destroyed. Louisville tornadoes spent only 18 to 20 minutes in the Louisville area and left behind a devastation even greater than the 1937 Ohio River Great Flood. Now, WHAS traffic reporter Dick Gilbert was already in the air with his helicopter when the tornado hit. And he was able to give the city a real-time account of the tornado's progress. Dick Gilbert's actions that day and his reporting saved countless lives, as described in a biography from a foundation that was set up to honor him. And I'll just read it here. On the afternoon of April 3rd, 1974, an F5 tornado, they said an F5, but I think it was an F4, touched down at the airport in Louisville and ravaged the city. Dick Gilbert was airborne in his helicopter when the weather turned ugly. He could clearly see the storm, so he stayed up and circled around behind the tornado, giving live reports on its path and the destruction it left behind. He was quite literally the eyes of the city, and many people credited him for saving lives that day. He received much recognition and many awards for his actions that day, including the presidential commendation from President Richard Nixon.
Wow.
Now, in the book Tornado, published in 2004, in this book is included a lot of Louisville residents' memories of that day. And the one that caught my attention was one written by the daughter of Gilbert, Candy Gilbert Medina. And I'm going to read you her description of that day because I think it kind of encompasses, you know, the whole day for everybody. You know, it was a scary day. And let me just read it for you here. I was a 10th grader walking home from Wagner High School with one eye on the weather. The sky was stormy looking, but it hadn't rained yet. By 4 p.m., the TV stations were airing tornado watches, and I got nervous. My dad raised me from age 9 when my mother was killed in a car accident. I would typically see him for a few minutes after school before he left to fly the afternoon traffic show at 3:30 p.m. Between 3:30 p.m. and 6 p.m. when he returned, I was on my own. We had a daily afternoon ritual where my dad would fly over the house and I would run outside to wave to him and let him know that I was okay. On April 3rd, the first tornado warning came on TV at about 4:15 p.m. and my stomach became a knot of fear. I turned on WHAS radio to listen to my dad and see if he was still in the air. I really wasn't afraid of him flying during the storm because I knew he'd skirt around it. I was more afraid that Jeff Douglas, who was the WHAS DJ at the time, would cue him for a traffic report and there would be nothing but dead air. For an only child with only one parent, the fear of a helicopter crash was even greater than the fear of a tornado. Sure enough, at 4:40 p.m., they cued him, and there was only silence. I went outside to check the weather and was shocked at how absolutely pitch black the sky had become to the west and how the air had taken on a weird greenish tinge. I ran back inside the house, desperately trying to stay calm and do smart things like taking flashlights, the radio, blankets, and the dog to the basement. On one of my trips upstairs, I heard Dad heading toward the house in the helicopter, flying low and fast. I ran outside. It still wasn't raining yet, and he hovered about 75 feet off of the ground, motioned furiously for me to get in the basement. It wasn't hard to read his lips either. I nodded and sprinted for the house as he took off in the opposite direction. Under the workbench in the basement, I listened to the radio for a few minutes as Dad was detailing the path of the tornado. It was actually very comforting to hear him describe what was going on for two reasons. First, I knew he was safe if he was still broadcasting. And second, as he described what was happening in Indian Hills and Northfield, I knew he was telling me that our house was safe and that I was going to be okay. Through all of this, Dad continued to marvel that people considered his actions that day to be heroic or reckless. Pick your adjective, her words. In reality, he was in the best position of anyone in the city. He could see the storm, and he could therefore easily avoid it by staying a few miles away from it. I knew that he would have landed in front of the house and picked me up and the dog if there had been any doubt in his mind that the storm was headed our way. It's funny how your perspective changes as you get older. As a 14-year-old, I began to resent being mostly known as Dick Gilbert's daughter. 30 years later, rereading the letters of thanks and remembering the horror of that day, I can't think of a title that I am more proud to wear. In terms of possible death and injury, Dick Gilbert was a game changer that day.
Definitely, that's
our description there.
Yeah.
His work alerted people, and his real-time account of the tornado made people take cover. And the WHAS coverage was very important that day in guiding Louisville residents through that tragic tornado. About 4 weeks later, WHAS had a rebroadcast of their April 3rd, 1974 coverage of the tornado. And on that day that they rebroadcast the coverage, it was a dark sky with low-hanging dark clouds.
Oh, wow.
And yes, you guessed it, in a scene reminiscent of the Orson Welles' 1938 War of the Worlds broadcast the night before Halloween, callers jammed the WHAS switchboard after turning into the rebroadcast, not knowing it was a rebroadcast, mm-hmm. and they were asking about this new tornado. They were calling the National Weather Service and the state police, and the radio stopped the broadcast about halfway through because of the panic it created.
Yeah, bad timing.
Bad timing, yes. The station later issued an apology for any confusion the broadcast caused, and they said they would wait for a sunny and blue sky day to rebroadcast.
Incredible, wow.
But WHAS was a lifesaver that day for a lot of people in Louisville. Indiana was also hit. During the outbreak, DePaul, Indiana had an F5, one of the seven F5s, and Monticello had, I think, an F4 that stayed on the ground the longest of any of the 148 tornadoes that day. At one time, Indiana had some 15 to 16 tornadoes on the ground at one time, prompting the National Weather Service in Indiana to issue tornado warning for the entire state. From what I read, this is the first and only time in U.S. history that's ever happened.
Wow.
Happened on that day. It hasn't happened since, but they just couldn't keep with the technology they had at the time. They couldn't keep up with all the tornadoes that were showing up on the radar. And finally, somebody made the decision, we're just going to issue a blanket tornado warning for the entire state. First and only time in U.S. history. So it got Indiana pretty good, too. I'll read the state fatality numbers here later, but Indiana was hit pretty hard too. April 3rd, 1974, Xenia, Ohio. Now, there are countless thousands of cities in the world, and I can reel off some of them, not all of them, that I've learned in my lifetime. But if asked, I probably can't remember the exact date I first heard the name of a particular city. but I do remember the exact date I first heard of Xenio Eye, April 3rd, 1974. I'd never heard of it before, but anybody that has any memory of April 3rd of 74 remembers Xenio Eye. You can say Pearl Harbor, Dealey Plaza, or 9/11, and people of certain ages can immediately tell you what happened in those events and what you're referring to. I would venture to guess that anyone who was of age on that date with any memory of the tornadoes, if you mention the name Xenia, the first thing they'll say is tornado. And most of them, or some of them, like myself, remember the date. Xenia is without a doubt the poster child of the tornadoes that day. It was 4:40 p.m. that the tornado slammed into the city. It was an F5, the strongest of all tornadoes, and as a result, 36 were killed. Of that total, two or four of those were killed in relief efforts. A couple weeks later, two or four National Guard members were killed in a fire as they were sleeping in a building and it caught fire.
Oh my.
They're included in the death toll, and they are also included in the memorial that Xenia later set up in town, a plaque with the list of the names of the people who died that day. Well, neighborhoods were blown up, and over $100 million in damage was incurred in Xenia as a result of this tornado. The path of the tornado stretched a half mile. A description of Xenia was simply death and debris. Now, a group of about 15 high school students were in their high school theater rehearsing for an upcoming play when one of the students went out in the hallway for a drink of water. She saw the tornado coming from a window and alerted the rest of them, and they ran from the stage to a safer place in the hallway of the school. From what I gather, school hallways are safe. A place. You don't want to be, say, in a gymnasium or a theater per se, at least the one like Xenia. But anyway, the kids ran out into the hallway, and only seconds later, you know, we're talking about how seconds matter during a tornado. Seconds later, a school bus weighing, about 12 or so tons came crashing down on this stage that they'd just been on rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the kids survived, thank goodness. Thankfully, that one girl went out and was thirsty and needed a drink. And that's those kind of stories just show you the randomness of these kind of disasters. It's just one simple thing like going out and getting a drink of water can mean the difference.
It is incredible.
Life and death.
Yeah.
So anyway, a train barreling through the center of town when the tornado hit had many of its train cars lifted off the train tracks. That's how powerful this tornado was, and rolled over, blocking the streets. This hampered later rescue effort, prevented rescue vehicles from reaching the hard-hit neighborhoods. They had to bring in heavy equipment to move the trains off the road. Now, during the tornado, a 16-year-old teenager by the name of Bruce Boyd filmed the tornado with his 8mm camera as it pounded his city. Now, it's not like today where somebody can, everybody has smartphones and you can pretty much film everything that's going on. Well, back then you didn't have that. And it's very rare to catch a tornado like the Xenia tornado on camera. Well, he filmed it. Another person had recorded it, and they combined his film with the recording. So you have pretty much a videotape.
Mm-hmm. Real-time video evidence of it.
And this video I found on YouTube. And I really encourage people to go look at these YouTube videos, the Xenia tornado and some of the others. Not to be a gawker of a tragedy, but as a motivator, that whenever you hear a future tornado warning or sirens, you get up and go and seek safety immediately. You don't waste time. Like I said, precious seconds can be the difference in life and death.
Well, it can help also people recognize what a tornado, feels and looks like, that they understand the severity of it.
Yes, and I'm sure everybody that experienced these tornadoes and later tornadoes, you mentioned the Mayfield 2021 tornado. You have the super outbreak of down in Alabama and other states, yeah. in April of 2011. I would venture to guess anybody that has experienced a tornado, if they ever hear a tornado siren or warning, they won't
hesitate to seek shelter.
Exactly. April 3rd, 1974, Tanner and Guin, Alabama. The state of Alabama was also badly hit during the super outbreak, as it was, as we just mentioned, in April 2011. The town of Tanner, Alabama, was actually hit with two F5 tornadoes within about a half hour of each other. I don't think that's ever happened, ever, in a single community, given the rarity of F5s. Anyway.
Hitting so close together.
Yeah, and they pretty much paralleled a path through the town of Tanner within a half hour of each other. A man who was injured in the first F5 was moved to a church, and when the second F5 hit a half hour later, he was killed when the church collapsed.
Incredible.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's the chances of surviving an F5 tornado and then being injured and then going to shelter and then getting killed like that? Some 44 people died in the two F5s that hit Tanner. Like I said earlier, I think a total of seven F5s hit during the day. I think the other one I haven't mentioned is the one that hit Sellier Park west of Cincinnati. They got hit. Not a lot of deaths, unless, you know, any death is tragic. But compared to some of these other F5 tornadoes, they got off pretty lucky. So anyway, these two F5s hit Tanner, and this is about, I don't know, maybe 7:30-ish in the evening. And not only tornadoes, I would assume, are terrifying to see coming at you in the daytime, but can you imagine at night, when you can't see anything.
That's a lot of destruction to a lot of states, and I'm sure a lot of cleanup afterwards. So we'll talk about the aftermath now. So let us know a little bit more about what happened after all these tornadoes hit.
And later in the evening, an F5 hit Guin, Alabama, killing some 28 people. So you have three F5s in the state of Alabama alone. And let me read you the death totals by state. I've seen conflicting numbers, but we'll just go with this. And it's just terrible. Alabama had 77 fatalities. Georgia had 16. Illinois, 5. Indiana, 47. Kentucky, 71, which conflicts with the 75 number I gave earlier. Michigan, 2. North Carolina, 6. Ohio had 38. Xenia, that was much of that number. Ontario, up in Canada, the province of Ontario, had 9 deaths. This is how far these tornadoes stretch from Alabama to Ontario. Tennessee had 45. Virginia had 1. West Virginia had 1. So a lot of death. And now the aftermath, the rescue efforts began immediately as people and organizations rushed to the scenes of the area, hardest hit, to provide relief. The Red Cross, Salvation Army, National Guard, different military branches, even college students, all jumped in to help the recovery. President Nixon declared a state of natural disaster in many of the states hit, thus freeing up federal aid to help these people that were suffering. One thing that caught my attention as I was doing this research is I saw a little blurb in the local Lexington Herald Leader, where our Lexington Red Cross and Salvation Army went out into the state to provide aid, help the communities that were suffering. And this immediately caught my attention, that the Red Cross coordinator was none other than 6 months after her tragedy. But the Red Cross coordinator for Fayette County was Mrs. John K. Barnes.
Mm.
We did the Barnes podcast.
Yes.
And here it is 6 months later, and this lady had her life torn apart by that tragedy, and then she's going on her way and doing, helping other people. And I just think that's
incredible.
Yes. Yeah. Great spirit. We mentioned earlier tornado preparedness, and the weather technology has really changed. It's much better today than it was on April 3rd. We have better radar. And a lot of this better weather forecasting is a result of this April 3rd, 1974 outbreak. More funding from the federal government went toward weather technology, weather research, and so forth. So we have the enhanced Doppler radar. We have better warnings with sirens. And of course, smartphones that alert us too. And we talked about Fujita. Well, you know, Ted Fujita was a Chicago scientist who invented the scale of tornadoes back in 1971. Well, you know that famous Mark Twain quote, which he's given credit for. I think another guy may have said it. He said, "Everybody complains about the weather, but nobody does anything about it." You know that famous quote.
Yes.
Well, I'm one of those people that complains about it, but basically doesn't do anything about it. Well, you know, that's only partially true. Mm-hmm. We do complain about it a lot. But Ted Fujita, his nickname's Mr. Tornado, based on his research of April 3rd, 1974, and later research, and even prior to that. And he devised the Fujita scale of tornadoes. And let me just briefly go over the scale here. It's been enhanced since it originally came out in 2001. I'm sorry, 1971. In 2007, they replaced it with an enhanced version, and they call it the EF scale now or something. But basically, it's a scale of six levels, depending on the damage and wind speed. An F0 is a light damage. F1 is moderate. F2 is considerable. F3 is severe. F4 is devastating. And F5 is incredible. And on that day, there was 30 F4 and F5 tornadoes. And Fujita originally gave the Xenia, Ohio tornado an F6, even though it went off the charts.
Yeah.
But he said that's inconceivable that a tornado can be an F6. But that's how incredibly devastating that Xenia tornado was.
Well, thankfully, nowadays we have this technology and we've got more education about preparedness, and especially in schools and through media and all that. So a lot of effort has been put into preventing.
It has been. And like I said, a lot of more money has gone into research. So this kind of day won't happen again. Unfortunately, we've had some terrible tornadoes in the last decade or so. And, you know, the warnings and the research are only as good as
people's response to it. Yeah.
Like I said, when I hear tornado warning, I don't stand around and ask questions. I jump into action. But, yeah, we do have better response time now. But there's no guarantee. There were people, you know, I read where you're supposed to dive into ditches. Well, for the last couple months after I started this research, on the way home or on the way to work, I would look for places. You know, there's one on the corner of Alumni and Nicholsville Road. I'm like, well, that's good. And then Jesse Clark, I pass that, and they have a big valley ball field or something. So well, that's a good place. But even, you know, they say you definitely don't want to stay in your car if a tornado's approaching. Now, if one's 20 miles away, you know, try to get home, whatever. But if ones are like right on you, get out of your car, because you're a sitting duck if you're in a car, and find a ditch if you can. And even if you do that, there's no guarantee. I think in one of these tornadoes, a lady did exactly that and jumped into a ditch and a bus fell on her. Mm-hmm. So there's no guarantee. There are people who went down to their basement that died during these tornadoes. So there's no 100% safe shelter that you can go to.
You just choose the better option.
Yes, exactly. Option is the key. And you just pretty much, you hunker down, and all you can do is pray and hope. Now, speaking of hope, you remember the Xenia kids in the theater, the story I told you about that. Well, none other than our national cheerleader for most of the 20th century, Bob Hope. That's my definition. He was our national cheerleader with the visits to the war zones and so forth. Well, anyway, he answered a call for help by having a relief show set up in nearby Dayton to raise funds for the city's recovery. I think it took place in December of 74. He visited Xenia And I don't think people realize, well, maybe they do, how important it is when someone like the president, President Nixon went to Xenia, Bob Hope went to Xenia, how uplifting to the spirit it is when people
come
and they, and it just gives you a little encouragement that, hey, things are going to get better. Well, anyway, in appreciation for what Bob Hope did, the city named the new high school auditorium the theater that had been destroyed. The bus fell on it. They called it the Bob Hope Auditorium.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I thought that was nice. And that's just one example of several thousands of people and organizations coming to the aid of their fellow man and their in this day of tragedy.
Yeah.
And to quote another famous American from the 20th century, and that's the way it was Wednesday, April 3rd, 1974.
Thank you, Wayne.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Tales from the Kentucky Room, a podcast brought to you by the Central Library's Kentucky Room staff at the Lexington Public Library. If you enjoyed listening, please take a minute to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about local history or genealogy research, you can visit us in the Kentucky Room to use our collection and newspaper microfilm, or you can email us at elibrarian@lexpublib.org. That's elibrarian@lexpublib.org. I'm Miriam, and we'll be back with another trip down Lexington's memory lane.